show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson. I'm joined, of course, on Skype, as always, by Michael Engel and Jeff Hur. Gentlemen, how you doing today?
Oh, fantastic.
And that's what you call a really crappy pass to your cohorts when you're not in the same room because they can't see you and then nobody talks and everybody talks at the same time. We had some gremlins today. We're not going to talk about them because it just makes me angry. I actually had to take my headset off and walk in the other room and talk to my fiance for a second while I did an interview you're going to hear here in a minute and with Anthony Sarantelli because I was pretty peeved that we'd lost 45 minutes of content.
And it's such a good story, too, that I'm glad he was gracious enough to stick around and kind of help us retell it. So it's definitely look forward to it. If you want to skip us, Yahoos, go ahead and go listen to Anthony Sarantelli. Really cool story about perseverance and the baseball sicknesses we talked about a little bit earlier in the night that didn't record.
So there's a reference that nobody's going to give because it was on the, you know, and I feel bad about it. Like, I'm angry about it. I'm angry with myself about it, and I know this is how Chris felt at times when stuff didn't work at the old man cave, and I'm mad at myself for it because I have nobody to blame for what happened but me. It just wasn't recording. I should have caught it. And it's funny because I would get really mad about it, but then you think if you listen to Fantasy Focus on ESPN, they're always giving Pod Vader a hard time because something didn't record. They lost 5 or 10 minutes of a show or a whole show. You know, they've talked about it before. So I don't feel so bad because I know the pros do it too. And they have a producer in a studio, and I have a computer on a big screen TV.
They have a producer who got hired for the job. We found a guy in a cape.
Yeah.
In fairness, I mean, that's probably the first interview I can think of that we've completely lost like that.
That is the first time we've had, since we've moved to Skype, that is the first time that we lost something, lost anything, any real audio. I've had it where it's cut out on me. We've had to stop for a minute during one interview where I actually had to stop and wait because I was cutting out real bad because I had a bad connection and I had to get my connection fixed. But other than that, and that was with Joel Goldberg. But other than that, we've been pretty lucky. So I'll take it for what it's worth. But this is going to be kind of a quick show now. The interview is about 15 minutes with Anthony Sarantelli. And then at the end, we also have an interview with John Mayberry. And so you'll have both of those today. And that's about 25 minutes, and then you'll have this. But I'm going to have to wrap this pretty quick because we're already an hour in, and I got to run over to the mall to take care of some stuff. So real-life woes, you know, first-world problems. If you haven't checked them out recently, please check out royalmanreport.com or kingsofkaufman.com/podcast or royalspodcast.com, where we're syndicated with our friends over at the Pine Tar Press and their podcast, where you can get us all in one feed now. So if you haven't checked that out, check that out. Unless you're getting your episodes from Kings of Kaufman, you'll want to update your feeds to the ones over at royalspodcast.com. And I've posted that on the site, and we'll continue to. You can find that information at Facebook. If you just search Kansas City Baseball Vault presented by Kelly's Westport Inn, we've had the information on there. We'll continue to do so. We also have it at Google Plus on the Kansas City Royal site community there at Google Plus. If you haven't already, you can always send us an email at kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com or drop us a voicemail at 913-871-0659. Let us know your thoughts, anybody you want to hear from, questions you might have. If you're not sure which RSS feed you need, shoot the email and I'll get it back to you. Recently, we've had Danny Duffy, Bob Dutton, Rex Hudler, J.J. Piccolo, Mike McCartney, and Elliot Johnson. I said this the first time we did this, and I'm going to say it again. I almost said Paul McCartney again because we've got Piccolo and McCartney together, and my eyes do this thing where apparently we had Paul McCartney on at some time. And like Mike said on the part that didn't record, I'd love to get his opinion on the second base situation. So
I think
I really would.
I think he would answer differently if we asked him about the Royals. I don't think he would.
Right. What do you think about the Royals this year? Well, I think Pippa is doing fantastic.
I'm going to have to
say. She's not a royal, though, is she? She's just a sister of a royal.
Wait, is he here now?
Yeah. Where did that come from?
Well.
So I guess the other guys have the Beinhart Press guys have not – who do they have? They have not Ned Yost, I think, and Up and In had not Jim Tracy, not Jim Tracy. I guess we're going to have not Paul McCartney. So he'll just have to drop in once in a while and then give his opinion on the Royals.
Chris Getz is a tosser. That was not as good as the other one.
No, anyway. You'll have to practice. The Royals are 9-0-1 in spring training, but as there was an article wrote by one of Mike's great authors, and I forget who off the top of my head, down at Kings of Kauffman, you can check that out. 9-0-1 in the spring, what does it mean? Not really anything, but what's really good to see from it is that Hosmer and Moose are hitting real well. Jeff, what do you take away from this quick spring training start?
Not too much. It's hard to take away anything from spring training. I think if you get to the point where you're starting to win a ton of games, I think you can take a little bit away from it in the sense that they've won games, they've got that attitude of, hey, we can do this, we can win these games, we're tough to beat, we're a solid team. That's something that, the Royals have had decent spring trainings before, but I don't know if they've ever really had a dominant one where they've come out, at least that I can remember in recent memory, where they've come out thinking, you know what, we got a chance at this thing, we can make a run. So, if anything, maybe it just gives them that little bit of additional, mental push to kind of put themselves over the top and say, let's make this happen, boys. But beyond that, it's not an indicator or predictor of any sort of success. But I think if they keep rolling like they are, I think, sometimes the magic has to start somewhere, right? I mean, why not spring training, I suppose?
Mike?
Yeah, it never really means that much. You look at how a spring training game goes, and it's, the first four or five innings, you've got your regulars in, and then you start bringing in minor league guys or the non-roster guys. So, you don't know really who's actually, a good team, because you're only going off about five innings at a time until you get towards the end. And even then, it's just kind of people are cruising. People are working on different things, So it's tough to kind of get an idea of how a team's going to be off spring training. But it's certainly better to see a team playing well and winning than if they were winning but playing poorly and just kind of getting by and winning, by basically luck. They're winning some games by, 8-2, things like that. They're getting a ton of hits. So, I think there's something that's for real as far as, the talent is showing through, but I don't think that it translates to anything that you can, predict for the upcoming season. But, it's certainly better than being, 0-9-1. So I guess there's that. And like you said, Eric Hosmer's hitting a lot better, or at least compared to what he did in the regular season last year. Moustakas is hitting everything. He's hitting about .560, has about five extra base hits and 15 at bats. So, those guys hitting well, looking, like they're, bouncing back, that's a good thing.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes, but the most important battle, I guess, in spring training, I guess it depends on how you look at it, is either which crappy starter is gonna be our fifth starter, or what below replacement player is going to be our second baseman. So Getz and Gio are in a battle, both hitting .286 with a .333 on base percentage. Getz homer gives him a slight slugging and OPS advantage, and that's right, folks. In case you missed it, I just said Chris Getz homer in the same sentence, and was actually referring to him hitting a ball more than 300 feet over a fence in a baseball game that kind of mattered. That was organized. It wasn't, I wasn't throwing the pitch to him. He actually hit a live ball as a home run.
It was on MLB.com and everything.
I think my most exciting moment from last year was, I can't remember what the game was or whatever, but I was watching, and Chris Getz hit one. It ended up bouncing off the wall. But he hit it, and as soon as he hit it, I was like, oh, my God, it's his hit. I'm just sitting there in my living room alone, and I jumped up out of my seat ready for Chris Getz's home run. And it just, like, hit the top of the wall and started something. I don't know if you guys remember that, but, man, it was it's become one of those, like, total Royals kind of comedic humor things that just caught on, and it's just hilarious. But, yeah, to see – That was definitely about as shocking as it gets from the biggest shocker of spring training so far, if I may say so.
Yeah. Well, he does have two home runs on his career, but let's talk about that for just a second, because I don't know if you knew it, Jeff, but Mike sees the future.
Oh yes, that's right.
And the proof is out there, ladies and gentlemen. You just have to go look at Twitter, look at the timestamps. Mike says Chris Getz home run, and it goes, and Mike says, no bleeping way. And Twitter just blows up on Engel because Engel called the Chris Getz home run.
I felt terrible afterwards, too, because I was like, I could just imagine Johnny Giovitella packing his bags for Omaha, and it's my fault.
He's like, that SOB on Twitter, he God just cost me the second base spot.
Man, yeah, I mean, I was just screwing around. I was just like, oh. Oh, yeah, look, Chris Getz, what? Oh, man.
I can only imagine, like, Chris Getz walking by his room as Johnny Giovitella is packing up his bag and says, hey, Johnny, I got you something for the road, and tosses him his home run ball.
That I want to see that fight. You've got Chris Getz, who's not a big dude, and you got Johnny Giovitella, who's not a big dude. And then I want to see, like, Sal Perez come in and break it up, and he's about a foot taller than both of them.
He just takes one hand and he throws to one side of the room and the other to the other side. They hit the wall.
You ever seen
combined
Andre the Giant?
Right.
That would be what it would be like. He just palms their heads, like, picks them up and moves
them. Holds them back from each other. It's like every movie that you've ever seen where the kid's, like, 6 foot, and he's holding the three-foot kid back that's swinging punches or whatever. That's
right.
That's about how that would work. But, hey, on the conversation of Sal Perez, him and Mendoza and Tiny Tim and a few others are headed to the WBC. No, that's who comes in to break up the fight, going back to that. It would be Tim Collins.
That's true.
Because he's about 100 pounds himself. So the three of them in a room together, and all of a sudden you have a remake of The Wizard of Oz. But Sal Perez, Mendoza, and others are headed to the WBC. Does it matter? Or more importantly, is anybody watching?
You know, I watched a couple of those games. It was, it's kind of neat to watch baseball that, to an extent, does matter, you know, because they're playing to win an actual tournament. It's organized and all that. I was watching last night, and China was playing against Cuba, and this guy hits a single, steals second base, and looks back, and the catcher is chasing the ball because he dropped it in the exchange. And so he thought it was a foul ball, so he's running back to first and, you know, didn't need to. Cuba puts him in a rundown. He's just stuck and gets out. But, yeah, I mean, I'll watch a little bit. But does it matter? No. I mean, I'd rather see Sal Perez stay in camp. I think I'd rather see Luis Mendoza pitch, you know, in front of the Royals. But, you know, most of these guys, unless they advance, they're going to be back in a week. You know, so you're not really missing a lot. Everybody's on kind of a pitch count and a play count. So you're not going to get anybody overworked. And I think that's the main concern with Sal Perez, is that they don't want to see him get hurt when he's really going to be doing about the same amount of work, maybe even less than he would have in camp. But he's playing for Venezuela, and they have three catchers. So, you know, he's not going to be the full-time guy all nine innings every game. So I don't think you have to worry too much about it.
Jeff?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that – I don't think it matters at all, really. I think it's kind of one of those fun diversions, really, in terms of – and when I say I don't think it matters, I mean in terms of how much stock people put in it, or how much they care about watching it or whatever. You know, I mean, I think it's something that people look at and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, it's kind of cool to see somewhat competitive baseball this time of year. But for me, you know, I have a little bit of a different approach on it, and I actually got into we'll call it a discussion on Twitter – with our friend David Leske about this. And
now, hold on a second. You and Leske had a differing of opinions on Twitter? That never happens.
We're not. We actually agreed the other day on something. it was something Chiefs related, though, so it only kind of sort of counts.
Yeah, it doesn't really count.
But, see, for me, it's just like, if it wasn't the Royals, like, if it's the Yankees and Derek Jeter wants to go play for Team America or whatever, it's like, okay, you know, fine, go off and play, we're the Yankees, whatever. When you're the Royals and you've basically gone more or less all in on 2013 and you looked at 2012 and it was a failure of a year based on the expectations you had coming in, and one of the reasons that you pointed to as an organization, you know, were injuries and things like that, and you looked at, oh, well, you know, maybe if Salvador Perez was there for the whole season, then maybe things would have gone differently. And I'm not saying he's going to get injured, and Mike already made the point that, you know, he might actually be playing less than he would if he was in spring training. But I think there's certain things like, first of all, whatever he's doing in the World Baseball Classic isn't under team control, which if I'm the Royals, that makes me nervous. And even though, you know, last year he got hurt when he was under team control, but that should just make you even more nervous. If it can happen that way, then it could definitely happen the other. But, I mean, it's just also, too, I think the bigger deal for me is kind of a break in focus. You know, they talk about all the clubhouse atmosphere and getting all the players to play together and to, you know, gel as a unit and all that stuff. And I'm not saying Salvador Perez is not going – he's going to be the outsider because of this, but – I think when you introduce a scenario where he breaks focus from spring training, and this is probably the most important season for the Royals in the last 10, 15 years. So I don't know if I like the idea of not having 100% focus from 100% of the players. And maybe it's a little bit too much, but you know, as much as there is riding on this coming season, I would just prefer not have to deal with it, not have to, even if the odds of him getting hurt or anybody getting hurt is minuscule, it's still there, regardless of whether or not how big it is. I'd just rather not have to deal with any of it, to be honest with you. So, I mean, if I'm the Royals, you know, as a fan, I'm just like, okay, whatever, there's nothing we can do about it. But if I'm the Royals, that's just me. And I know they can't necessarily prevent him from participating, but
yeah,
that's kind of how I feel on it, and it's not a huge. I'm not like, oh my God, Salvador Perez. I'm not, you know, like the milk and bread guy on Twitter. If you guys have seen that video,
we gotta keep the South Perez.
They said snow. But I'm not freaking out like that or anything. But you know, I'm not gonna lie. If I just be like, you know, I'd rather have Perez here, and I'd rather have Tim Collins here, and everybody here, as opposed to, you know, out focusing on playing for Team Venezuela, whoever it might be.
Well, here my thing on it, I don't mind that they're gone. This year, as long as Perez doesn't get hurt, I mean, that'd be the big deal. But it gives Mendoza more work. It gives the Royals a chance to take a better look at Will Smith and Hochaver and Chen. You know, especially Hochaver and Chen, Smith is going to the minors. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's got an option. He's going to the minors. But it gives him a really good chance to take a good look at all three. And the
backup catchers, too.
Right, that's what I was getting to.
Yeah, someone's got to play while Perez is going.
And the WBC is pretty controlled. Like, there really is a big major league touch. And there's a lot of teams that put their thumbs down and said, no, you can't go. My thing is, why does it have to be in March? It's in tropical climates anyways. Why couldn't they do this in, like, the following the week of the Super Bowl? Then you have baseball right away. I think that would be great. Do the WBC every other year, every 3 years, whatever they want to do it. But do it in, you know, in January in Miami and Arizona and tropical climates, you know, other tropical countries like, for example, Cuba, but obviously it wouldn't be in Cuba because of all the restrictions on Cuba. But places like that, the Caribbean, there's all sorts of places. Yes, you would step on the toes of the winter leagues like in Venezuela and stuff. But, you know, I think that there's too much money on the line with everything that goes on with the major leagues. And, you know, you could even do it the week following the Caribbean World Series. You could have went right from that into the WBC, and it'd be done or almost done by now, and you wouldn't even be having these questions, and I think you'd be in a better place. moving along, Kyle Zimmer was stated that he may be starting in Double A, not High A, and that's a huge piece of news because, you know, we've had on folks from the Royals that have said, yes, we're going to take our time with players, there's no rush, yada, yada, yada. But then for them to make the statement, yeah, we'll bring Kyle Zimmer to Double A instead of High A, which if I remember back to the Piccolo interview, he did kind of hint that if not to begin with, that pretty quickly Kyle Zimmer would most likely be in Double A this year. He was most likely going to get a good amount of time in Arkansas. Mike, what's your takeaway from that? Is it a change in opinion or a case-by-case type item?
Well, I think JJ was talking about it being something that they would look at the individual pitcher and the individual player. But you also get the idea, you know, you look back at some other guys that have done pretty well. You know, Mike Montgomery had, you know, good enough showing sometimes that, you know, maybe he could have been pushed up a little faster. So I don't know. I think it's generally the same policy, but I think they recognize that Zimmer, you know, he's first round pick, fifth overall. He's a guy who pitched in college. You know, he's, you know, still really young, especially for being a guy out of college, that, you know, they just want to get him moving. And he must have shown them enough last year in his few starts and in whatever off-season workouts that, yeah, I mean, it's a possibility that he could make that jump. It's not unheard of. I mean, you see guys like Chris Sale makes it into the majors the same year that he's drafted, I believe, and Mike Leake was another one who had a similar path. There are guys who, you know, they spend a year in the minors and they're up. They're in the big leagues. So, you know, if they think that he's got the temperament to do it and that, you know, his stuff is developing and he's learning everything that he needs to, you know, why not? Why not see what he can do in Double A? Why not just skip a level and see what happens? You know, they can always send him down. They probably wouldn't want to, but if everything looks right in the workouts in minor league camp, yeah, it's a definite possibility. And then look at the rotation that you're having down there if that's the case. You've got John Lamb, who's probably going to start there. You have Yordano Ventura, who is most likely to start there. He's pitching really well in spring in Royals camp, but he only pitched six games in Double A last year. Zimmer, who, you know, everybody likes Zimmer, I think. And Jason Adams is going to start in Double A. You know, Jason Adams is a fourth starter, and he's a top 10 prospect in the Royals system. And they're all on the same team. I mean, that sounds like take a trip down to Springdale, Arkansas, and stay for a few days to me.
We'll have Eric Edelstein, whatever.
We'll have to review that.
Yes, we always have to get a pronunciation on his name because I think I interview him and say it about every way I can come up with, and he never corrects me. God bless him. Anyways, he's the GM of the Naturals, and he's a great friend of the program. He's been on several times with us, and he's going to be stoked this year, man. He loves baseball, and to have that kind of talent again through there is pretty exciting. Jeff, did you have anything to add to that?
Oh, yeah, only that, kind of just echoing what Mike said, but the starting a Double A is definitely significant. I mean, I think it was just going to be, if he was going to be in Wilmington, it was more of just going to be like a kind of get your feet wet, get yourself comfortable for maybe a month, if that, and then we'll bump you up and spend most of your time down there. But, yeah, I mean, as the Royals have shown, not necessarily with pitchers. Now, granted, a lot of the pitchers haven't exactly performed well at AAA, but once you get to AA, you know, that last step to AAA, that can be a short stop. I mean, I don't think Duffy was at AAA for a whole season. And, you know, I mean, if Montgomery would have in 2011, after the great spring he had, if he would have came down and been lights out in AAA like he was the previous years, I mean, I don't think they would have hesitated to pull him up very soon. So, you know, he's just if he does well, you know, and he gets put up to AAA in July, he's an injury or a really, really good month or something away from being there. So I do think it is significant because it accelerates that timetable a little bit to where we're probably not going to see him a ton. Speaking about Kyle Zimmer, but I don't know if I ever mentioned that at the top now that I think about it, but I don't know if we'd see him a ton in 2013 either way. But, you know, if it's a month versus just a game or two, that that could make a lot of difference in his development.
Well, something to keep in mind is when these four guys are should be up here, if natural if everything went naturally, which I think Zimmer will be up here before that, before what I'm about to say, if he's any good. But if you were to say a year in AA and a year in AAA, which the Royals don't necessarily do, then as James Shields' contract was running out, you would have these four guys to choose from if they all hit. Now, you honestly have about a 25% hit rate on players, but they're already at the AA, so it might be a little bit higher. So, what's that?
I said not if you're the Royals.
Yeah, if you're the Royals, it's a lot worse
about
with 20. Pitchers.
Yeah.
So we'll see where this goes. But staying in AA, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals are going to have a Hall of Fame, and their first inductee. Now, keep in mind, these don't have to be great players. These have to be great AA players. It's just like you didn't have to be a great professional baseball player to make it into the Hall of Fame in college. So these are their first four candidates for the new Hall of Fame for the Northwest Arkansas. It's Clint Robinson, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, or Keila Kaiahui. And if you take a look at the picture, guys, obviously the fans can't, our listeners can't see this, but this picture that they have linked on the Arkansas page, it looks like that Clint Robinson's about 400 pounds in this picture. It is not a good angle for Clint whatsoever, and the way that it's blown up and everything. So I'll let you guys take a look at that and see what you think. But Naturals is a great place to go see a ball game. They're going to have the AA All-Star game this year, and I had full intention of going to that before we decided on moving to Arizona. But head on over to nwanaturals.com/Hall of Fame. Vote for your favorite. It's funny to see what their fans are saying. I mean, a lot of them are really in favor of Keila and Clint, and there's a good reason for it because Clint won the Triple Crown down there, and I mean he's been a great player in the minor league system for the Royals, but that's kind of like Anthony, who we're going to talk to shortly. He's kind of just one of those guys that got into the minors and never quite figured it out, but he did have a cup of coffee at the major league level, which that's an expensive cup of coffee. So I'm sure Saratelli would have loved to spent the 4 or 5 days that C-Rob got in the major leagues.
And I think also Clint Robinson had the benefit of having a full season in AAA, where I don't know that Moustakas or Hosmer either spent a full season in AA.
Nope.
So.
And it seems that the Royals have always rushed people from AA into AAA because I think a lot of it has to do with the climate in Northwest Arkansas is a lot different. It tends to be a more of a hitter's park, so they like to see what they can do at AAA. But as far as pitching goes, it would not be unheard of to see guys go from AA right to the majors. And I think you're going to see AAA turn a little bit like it used to be when the Royals weren't good at all, and that's where it was a bunch of never haves and has-beens kind of go to try to find a spot.
It's where
but
you're
I,
stashing Shane Costa and
yeah.
Calvin Pickering
and
Justin Huber. And, I mean, I could go for how much time do we have? I could keep doing this.
None.
D. Brown.
So, yeah, it wasn't pretty. And I think you might see some more of the same in AAA, and AA might be the place to really see some great Royals prospects. But we'll see how the Royals handle it. But I think you could see any of those four guys make the jump in 2014. I don't think you will in 2013 just because of roster space and 40-man and all that good stuff. But if they're on the 40-man, if they find a way to get any of those guys on the 40-man
Lamb already is, so
I would not be surprised.
Yeah, and he's already pitched some in AA. He's just going to be in AA probably for a month. I mean, I think it's kind of
a season in AA before he had Tommy John, and he was even regressing because he was leading up to the Tommy John surgery.
Right, and he needs to get his velocity back. But which we talked about in the last show, go back and listen to that one. If you have any questions on that, because we're not going to revisit it right now. But
one last thing I think you look at in that scenario, too, is if whether it's, you know, in 2013 or going into 2014, I mean, if they have James Shields and Wade Davis, and we've talked about this before, but with Jeremy Guthrie, and then if Duffy and Paulino come back and they were what they were before, then and those four guys that we just talked about in AA, all either make the move to AAA or looking like they could be on that major league roster, then the Royals all of a sudden have a sort of embarrassment of riches almost in something that was a a huge weakness, and then you have possible trade bait and things like that. So, you know, if the Royals can finally do something right and they can develop these four guys, then the 2014-2015, that definitely becomes a real clear window for them.
Well, moving as we continue to wrap around the minor league system here, we're going to move on up to AAA. We're not actually going to talk about anything Storm Chasers related. We're going to talk about a big event that they have going on out there. If you don't know, Bob Gibson grew up in – Bob Gibson, Cardinals Hall of Famer, grew up in Omaha. And I had a chance to meet him at a College World Series one time, got a picture signed by him and all that. And he was a nice enough man to me. I hear that he's not always that way, but he was.
It depends on if you have a bat in your hands or not.
Apparently. he's going to get a statue built for him outside of Werner Park, and which is really cool, and I think it's a really neat thing they're doing. Tim McCarver, who's a national baseball guy who a lot of people like to mock and whatever, but he's doing the job that all of us wish we had. He was Gibson's catcher with the Cardinals, and then Joe Torre and Bill White are also going to take part in an event Wednesday, April 10th in the Heritage Project Banquet at La Vista Embassy Suites, which is going to lead to an unveiling of an original sculpture of Bob Gibson the next day at Werner Park. The public is invited to this event. It's a little pricey. Tickets to the event are available for $100 a piece or $1,000 for a 10-person table. Or if you want a VIP ticket, which includes a private social hour before the banquet, you can get those for $250 a pop or $2,500 for a table. You can find out more information at bobgibsonproject.org. And we're going to be talking about it a lot, about the statue. It was sculpted by an Omaha native that went to Creighton. And it's going to be 8 feet in height. It's going to be a really neat piece for Werner Park. If you've never been to Werner Park, it's a great place to see a ball game. But this will definitely add to the experience. But we've been told that we're supposed to have Tim McCarver on sometime in the next week or so. So we're hoping to hear from him and possibly have Joe Torre later this month as well, but leading up to this event on April 10th, which, Mike, you're planning to go down and cover that, correct?
That's the idea, yeah, once we get it all squared up. I'm hoping to get down there.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes. It's kind of funny. I get this phone call, and my phone, I have an app that tells me who's calling. If they're not in my address book, it tries to find the number for me, and it comes up as Omaha Storm. So I'm like, are the Storm Chasers calling me to sell season tickets or whatever, you know? But it turns out that Lee Warren they were apparently looking for people in the Kansas City area that were somewhat connected or had a forum, and
Lee I don't Warren, know how they found us.
Right? Lee Warren suggested us. Lee Warren, friend of the program, and covers the Storm Chasers and works for Yahoo, does a lot of different stuff. Great guy. He suggested us, and so we're happy to be involved in this, and they say that there's going to be a press side of it, and they invited me, and I said, well, I'm going to be in Arizona. Can my buddy Mike go? And I called Mike, and he was all for it, so we're gonna send Mike down there once we get this all figured out. And it was kind of funny to get that phone call, though, and finally I asked the guy, he's going through his whole spiel about this and everything, and if we'll help out. And I'm like, I'll help out. You know what I mean? I would help out if they wouldn't have given us anybody, but they said, yeah, we're going to get Tim McCarver for you. He's real excited about this and loves Bob Gibson, caught for him for, you know, so many years, and was a catcher for 11 years with him, and he's just excited to be involved in this. So Bill White who spent 13 seasons in the major league and was president of the National League from 89 to 94. He spent 8 seasons with Gibson as his teammate, and then you know who Joe Torre is. So we're pretty excited about it. I called Mike and kind of dropped that on him, and he laughed and thought it was pretty entertaining. And then I tried to slide it by Jeff, and Jeff didn't even in an
he
email.
Knows,
Jeff
so
didn't even acknowledge it until we were on break just now and asked about it. So
I was at work. I saw that and I was like, wait a second, Joe Torre?
Yeah.
And I couldn't even believe it. And then I was going to respond and be like, where the hell did this come from? And then I got busy at work or something, and always seems to happen, doesn't it?
Well, if you know us personally, this is a bit of an inside joke, but you know, like I said, we've been promised McCarver. Hopefully we'll have him on sometime next week. And sometime in the next week or so, you'll hear an interview with Jason Martinez, too. You might have heard that this week if we wouldn't have had any troubles with the recording, but you didn't. So he'll probably be on with us next week. He's from BP and Major League Depth Charts. If you haven't had a chance, go to ESPN if you have an insider subscription. If not, get a subscription to ESPN the magazine there. I believe Amazon has a 6-month subscription for $5. Get you a subscription, which gets you access to Insider, and then you can go read Window of Contention. It's a great series by Jason Martinez of MLB Depth Charts and Baseball Prospectus. So go check that out. But back to the Bob Gibson thing, we're supposed to have on Tim McCarver, as I said, and then they also said that they were going to try to get us Joe Torre a little closer to April. So I'd be pretty excited to have Joe Torre on. I got a lot of questions I could ask Joe Torre, and I don't know how much outside of the Gibson thing he would talk about, but it's not very often that you get the executive vice president of baseball operations on your show and have chances to really ask him. And obviously Torre's got a background with the Cardinals and the Yankees. So it'll be interesting. But, yeah, go check it out, BobGibsonProject.org. I don't know that there's anything really to add to that, guys, but did you have any thoughts on this, Mike?
Even if it's the Cardinals, I guess I can take a shot at it.
Well, and you'll have fun going down there. Worked out and being there's talk that George Brett might be at this thing, so it'll be a neat thing to definitely be part of, and I really wish I could be there. And I tell you, depending on how things go with my job search, I may have to stick around a couple of weeks just to go to this. So, Jeff, what's your thoughts on Gibson getting a statue?
I mean, despite the fact that he's a Cardinal, I'll take that out of the equation. But, it's well-deserved. I mean, the guy's he's a legend. So I think it's pretty cool. You know, I always think it's cool when hometowns do stuff like that. Like, I'm super proud of my hometown of Kansas City, obviously, if you couldn't tell. So, you know, I definitely think it's cool when hometowns recognize people like that.
Well, and I think it's going to be a neat event. So we're really proud of it, and we can't wait to get some of this to talk to Tim McCarver about Bob Gibson and what he's done, and maybe even have Bob on at some point for you guys to go up to this event and see what's going on. So. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Anthony Sarantelli, and then we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with John Mayberry, a clip that was provided to us by the Ball Game. Check them out, 4 p.m. Wednesday afternoons on 1510, hosted by our good friend Chris Kamler. He's of course, the one doing this interview. Mayberry takes a shot, maybe unintentionally, at Ned Yost, so definitely check out that interview, and then if we actually recorded any outtakes this week, I'll have to check and see. We'll have those on the very end, of course, like always. Again, update your streams if you haven't already. Check out RoyalsPodcast.com, check out EchoNetwork.com, and Kings of Kauffman, and we'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages. The Vault.
Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Every Wednesday at 4, it's time for the Ball Game.
Shake those sheets. Get on your feet. Uh-huh.
No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Oh, my goodness, another assist for Alex Gordon.
Bubba Starling.
You know, I grew up a Royals fan. Just a pretty special time, you know?
Join Baseball's Best Wednesdays from 4 to 5 on
The Ball Game on ESPN 1510 AM.
And we're back on the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We are pleased to be joined by a member of the Kansas City Royals organization. We're talking with Anthony Ceritelli. Plays all over the place. Finished last year with the Omaha Storm Chasers. Anthony, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
The reason we really wanted to talk to you was we wanted to get a feel for your journey to professional baseball. And, you know, just doing a little bit of research, it's not the typical path that most players go through step by step. Go through just what that journey has been like and how you ended up in the Royals organization.
Sure. My journey has not been, you know, if you were to look up most guys' paths to the big leagues, it's definitely not something that would pop up the way I did it. But, you know, that's something that I'm probably the most proud of if I do get to the big leagues or when I do get to the big leagues, that, you know, something that I'm not ashamed of, I guess, or something I'm really, really proud of and would love to tell, and I'll tell you guys the story right now. You know, it goes back quite a ways when how I started and how I got to the Royals, but it goes all the way back, actually, to high school. My freshman year in high school, I actually got cut from my baseball team, and I happened to know the varsity pitching coach. He was my middle school gym teacher, and he had me come back as a pitcher. And I got cut as a position player. He had me come back as a pitcher, and I made the team as a pitcher. And this is the best part of the story. I pitched that year two-thirds of an inning. I came in with bases loaded. I gave up those three runs, and then I gave up three of my own. And that was the only pitching I did, and I think I got three at-bats. So, you know, I kind of had I was a small guy entering high school. I was 4'11", 95 pounds when I entered high school. So I was never one of physical strength and size early on. I attribute that to the late blooming that I've for my career. And, you know, so I ended up playing the rest of my years in high school and went to college and all that. But to get to professional baseball, I'll skip forward to 2005 when I graduated college. I didn't get drafted or signed by anyone, and my thought process at the time was not so much anymore, you know, I've always wanted to get to the big leagues, but at that point, I didn't know what else to do, really. I mean, I got my degree and all, but I just love playing baseball, so I decided to, you know, go to open workouts, and I went to 7 open workouts that summer. And, you know, I'm from New Jersey, so I went to ones in the area in New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia area. And I actually flew to a couple. One was in Minnesota, and the last one that I went to was in Chicago. And that was September 2005. Now, I hadn't, you know, I stopped playing in May 2005 when I graduated college, and I've been going to these workouts all summer. You know, they're spread out. So I go to this workout. It's a Padres workout, but it's held at an independent team's stadium in the Chicago area, the Windy City Thunderbolts of the Frontier League. So I go to this workout, and, you know, typically at these workouts, there's about 100 people or so, and like I said, they're open to the public, so they have to filter out, you know, the people that just want to come to say they, you know, tried out for the Padres or for the Yankees or for the, you know, whatever team you love, you know, you could, any Joe Smith can go do them. So out of 100 people, usually they make a cut pretty quickly and get to a couple of the guys that they think, you know, they might be interested in. And at all these workouts, that always ended up working out for me because, you know, I could play a little bit. So I made those cuts, and they would always say afterwards, you know, after they take a second look at you, you know, great job. Here's my card. We'll give you a call if we want to bring you on. And, you know, I got that spiel every time, and I never got that phone call. So at this final workout that I was, this actually was literally my final workout that I was planning on doing, because it's, you know, seven of them over the course of, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, whatever it was, over the summer. I went to this one for the Padres, and the independent team that was running it asked me to come play for them. You know, the Padres gave me the same spiel. Oh, you did great. We'll call you. And so the independent team said, come play for us. So I said, okay, great. Yeah, no, this is the first job offer I've gotten. So that didn't start till May 2006. So I didn't play for a full year from May 2005 to May 2006. Just working out by myself, hitting off the tee, you know, throwing into a net, or if I found somebody I could do it with. So I didn't play any organized ball. So May 2006 rolls around, and I go out to Chicago, and I get to play my first year of professional baseball. You know, it's indie ball. And I stuck around for the full year, which is an accomplishment in itself, because in indie ball, it's very much a revolving door. And, you know, if they don't win at the time and you're not doing the job, they'll find someone else that can, because there's no tomorrow, kind of. There's no next year. There's no at the next level, you know, from AAA to the big leagues. They're not looking at that. They're looking at trying to win right away. So I stuck around the whole year and became pretty close with the owner of the team. And he had set up for me in 2007, now this the following spring, he set up a couple of private workouts for me with the Padres, who I guess he was close with because he had the Padres running a tryout at his field. And one with the Chicago White Sox. And they were on March 1st and March 3rd, 2007. And the Royals were running one of the open workouts to the public on February 27th. And I remember those dates very well because my birthday is February 27th. So I went to this open workout on my 24th birthday. And, you know, same thing, 100 people or so. They have to filter out and get to the guys they want to actually take a look at. So I make that cut, and I don't know, however many there were, 10 or so, and they look at us, and then they took me and one other guy, and we did a little extra. We did some more. So after that, we finish, and they ask me, you know, if I'd like to come to spring training. And, you know, I kind of stopped, and I was so excited about these other two workouts because they were, you know, one-on-one and a semi-private workout that I kind of just went to the Royals one to get the nerves out, to just get loose for these other ones. So, you know, they offer me this, and, you know, I mean, for a second it startled me because I wasn't really expecting it. But, you know, of course I accept. What am I going to do? This is the first opportunity I have to play for an organized team. You know, of course I'm in. So I signed right there on my 24th birthday. My first contract with an organization of Major League Baseball. And, you know, I can take you through the years up until now, but, you know, 7 years later, I'm still here in the same organization, and I'm working my way up. I'm getting closer and closer, and it's been a long ride, not the typical ride, but, you know, something I'm proud of. I definitely had to work pretty hard to get here, so I love telling the story, and I'll tell it over and over. It's, you know, it's different, so I think people enjoy that.
It's almost serendipitous because I think 2007 was when the Royals were starting to expand their minor leagues as well. So they needed more teams and they needed more players. And it just happened, like you said, right place, right time. Do you know who the other guy was at that tryout, and did the Royals sign him too?
Yeah, they actually did sign him. Mike Thompson was his name. He played, I think, for 1 year, maybe two at the most. He only made it to low A, I believe, but he did sign out of there. I don't know where he went afterwards, but I think he had been with an organization beforehand. Mm-hmm. So he had been in affiliate ball. I had not. So,
he was trying to stick around and you were trying to break in.
Exactly.
So when you run into that situation, what kind of things keep you going? I mean, it's, I'm reminded of a quote in Moneyball where, you know, they're talking about at some point everybody's told that their time is up. But you didn't give up. You know, I was told when I was about 16 that I wasn't going to be playing much more organized baseball aside from rec leagues. But, you know, you know, like you said, you were smaller in high school, and that probably led to, you know, where you didn't get, you know, scholarship offers for college, and then you get out of college and, You know, it's still kind of the same thing. You go undrafted and have to go through these tryouts. So what kind of things what keeps you, you know, motivated despite, you know, all of those different obstacles?
You know, I don't, you know, you could always say the love of the game. I do love playing. I love being out here. I love being with the guys. Like, it's just something I know now, you know, it's just what I've done. But, you know, coming out of college and stuff, I got my degree, and my grandfather owns a printing company. So my family's all together in New Jersey, and they all work there. So it's like, you know, I had some other things I could have done, but, you know, it wasn't for me. I didn't want to do printing. So, I graduated with a computer degree, management information systems. So I'm pretty savvy with the computers, and, you know, I could have gone in that direction too. And I just, you know, I knew that I could do that, another year or two, you know, if I had to. I was like, why not stick it out? And so I stuck it out and, you know, found a little success. And then, you know, like, I sign and I find a little more success, and, you know, that just drives you. And then I start realizing that, you know, maybe I can still achieve that dream that you had when you're 5 years old, you know? So I just kind of, I just didn't let it go ever. So it just hangs with you, you know? And now, like I said, every year it just keeps, I seem to keep improving somehow, even though, you know, I'm 30 now, and I just turned 30 a few days ago. So, it's not not too many guys get through 7 years of organized ball without getting released or getting to the big leagues or getting traded or anything. And I've done that, especially if I can complete this year. Hopefully I do get to the big leagues, but if I complete this year without doing that, I will successfully make it through 7 years of my contract without any of that stuff happening. And I'm 30 years old. That has to be some sort of record. You guys should look that up, because there's not too many guys that last that long at that age. But you know, that's something that drives me, just to kind of prove people wrong, I guess. Not that people ever told me I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I just want to show people that I could, you know. It kind of goes back to high school, where I cut my freshman year. Maybe even back to Little League, if you want to go that far, where I moved one time when I was in middle school, and I got to the new town, and no one knew me, and I didn't make the All-Star team. And it didn't seem to be based on how you played. It seemed to be based on who your father was, or, you know what I mean? It was very political at that such a young age. It was like, what did I do wrong? I played just as well as that guy, and he's like, I'm the All-Star team, and I'm not. You know, that was a big deal to me at the time. And, you know, it's just stuff like that. Just, you know, just burned a little bit inside. And, you know, you want to push people along. But, you know, at this point now, it is just because I want to do it for myself. I enjoy it. And I just want to play that. I follow them. And I'm all okay.
Well, Anthony, we'd keep you around a lot longer and talk about this, and we might have you on again another time, but you're breaking up a little bit on us, so we're starting to have a little bit of trouble understanding you. We got it all this time. A little behind the scenes, the recorder stopped, and we had to have Anthony restart with us, and thank you for taking the time to do that. Like you said, you love telling the story, and you can tell the passion in your voice, and if nobody's ever seen it, he's got a little production company. It's ARS1Productions.com. And a lot of really neat stuff out there. They've done an Our Time commercial. He was featured in an article on the Royals site last year about getting in. He was in minor league spring training, not major league. But, I mean, you've seen it all, man, in your 7 years. And you're the first pro baseball player we've had on this show that was actually our age. I'm 32. Mike is 33, I believe. And I honestly don't know how old Jeff is, but he's right around there.
He's about 19 if you look at him.
Yeah, if all the guys we've either had on the show were all, you know, twice our age or younger. I think Duffy's been the closest we've had, and you know, Jason Adam comes on here regularly, and he just got to drink, and all of us, that makes our backs hurt just thinking about it. So, yeah, but we're going to let you go. We're going to have you on again, but follow him on Twitter, ARS1Production, and check out the website, ARS1Production.com. We'll have you on again just to talk about that kind of stuff and the fun stuff, because we absolutely love that. But thank you for coming on today, Anthony.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
All right. Anthony Sarantelli, everybody. We'll talk to you soon, Anthony.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
No problem, guys.
So that was Anthony Sarantelli. We're going to take a quick break to do a couple of production things, and we'll be right back with some Royals talk. I'm sorry.
No, I mentioned that we have gremlins sometimes.
Well, this gremlin had a name, so we lost that whole open. We lost the whole 50 minutes that we did today, guys. So we'll see how it works out. So I do apologize to everybody. This one's on me. But let's take it back. Mike, go ahead and bring us back in, and Anthony, tell your story again, and then we'll go from there.
So start over.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mike, bring us in and go from there. I'm so sorry,
was it,
guys.
Was it too long or anything? Like, do you have a time limit?
No, we're a podcast, so we have no limitations.
Do whatever.
Yeah, we have no limitations of regular radio, so you're fine. You can talk for as much time as you have. We're on your schedule, not the other way around. So Mike, go ahead and bring us back in. I'll be right back.
This is recording, right, Troy?
Yeah, it's good to go now. I'm
okay.
So sorry.